Our own resident, Monsignor Bill, will celebrate his 52nd ordination anniversary of ordination to priesthood on Monday, January 31st. And our staff celebrated this occasion last week by having a cake together. And I asked Monsignor if he had any words of wisdom for us. One thing he said was, follow the light. And strangely enough, the light is streaming through the front doors of our church, but really we know that the true light that we follow is Jesus Christ. In the passage today that I just read, Jesus was himself reading from the scriptures, from the prophet Isaiah, saying that the Isaiah's prophecy was fulfilled in their hearing. The people at first are amazed, but then start to question and they become shocked and in disbelief. And they say that one of their own surely cannot be this about whom Isaiah was talking. And so they try to drive him away. They are closed to the newness that God is giving to them. They are very content with the way things are going, and they want to practice their faith the way they know how to do it. So Jesus leaves Nazareth and goes to Capernaum, where he encounters people who are open to something new. He calls simple fishermen to follow him, and they drop their nets and do so. They begin what I like to call the divine adventure in Christ. Someone who also had a divine adventure in Christ is Paul, after his conversion. Today I focus on that beautiful second reading. While we often hear this during wedding ceremonies, it is very much worth noting that Paul wrote this to an entire community. Corinth was a very diverse community, city really, since it was at the crossroads in the Mediterranean. It is also worth noting that Paul came to understand this great diversity of gifts among the members of the Christian community much later in his life and after having followed Jesus for many years. The divine adventure was something that he was open to after having been closed off and very rigid. We might call 1 Corinthians chapter 13 a supreme piece of theology that embodies the entire Bible, because the whole message of the gospel is there. Paul gives us a very deep understanding of love that is very different than the way our culture understands love. And of course, we know that God is love. So in essence, Paul is giving qualities of love that are descriptors for God. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. It is never boastful or conceited. God is not rude, nor does God take offense. I'm being deliberate with changing the words. Love takes no pleasure in other people's faults. It is always ready to excuse, to trust, to hope, and to endure. Love does not come to an end. This has an infinite quality, like the very being of God. And whenever any one of these qualities is present, we can be sure that God is present as well. Divine love is an absolute open-heartedness. And when we find ourselves in that space, our energy flows outward and even expands. But when we're not in that space of divine love, the energy tends to suck in. We tend to get into the negativity, thinking about who did me wrong, or why we don't like certain people, or how one of my relatives never talks to me, and why so-and-so is a jerk. To retain a positive experience, we have to be intentional about loving. And as one spiritual guide said, to allow it to stay in our brain and our heart for at least 15 seconds before it sticks and imprints there. We have to deliberately, consciously choose to love and not to hate. This is part of the conversion story of Saul, who was a great leader in his faith, and he knew very well, as a Jewish leader, how to judge and to exclude. But after he met Christ and had his conversion experience, Paul knew God as love. And referring to his own conversion, Paul wrote in the passage we heard this evening, "Now we see through a mirror darkly, but one day we shall all see face to face. The knowledge that I have now is imperfect, but one day I shall know as fully as I am known." Paul is convinced that he is fully known by Christ. He's seen all the way through, his warts and all. Everything about him is accepted by God. He realizes that if he could be fully known and loved and seen for who he is, including his past sins of consenting to murder, then all he can do now in this life is to return the divine gift and treat others as he has been known by Christ. He says he lets go of his childish way of thinking and acting to become more mature or adult in Christ. Keeping our heart spaces open takes daily constant work because our egos and the events of life want to close those heart spaces down. The voices of culture tell us to judge, to dismiss, to hate, and to fear. If we don't have some spiritual practice that keeps our hearts open, we can become grumpy old men or hateful old women. By the last third of life, without being attentive to loving, negativity is all a person has left. Maybe we know people like that, and maybe we are so repulsed by it that we don't want to become that way ourselves. We have to work at love, to develop a generosity of spirit, a readiness to smile, a willingness to serve others instead of being served. Because as Paul wrote, if you can do great things, even if you do them for God, and you don't have love, then really you're merely a resounding gong or a clashing cymbal. So every day, let's take the temperature of our souls, observing our energy, if it's loving and flowing outwards in service to others, or if it's negative and dragging us down. One practice that I have found helpful is to read that passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and replace that word love with my name. I do it as an examination of conscience, especially before confession. And I have found that it helps me to grow in my practice of what Paul is writing about. And so I conclude simply by repeating what Monsignor Bill said. Follow the light, brothers and sisters.